Good afternoon and welcome to WBAA's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. If you have a question for the program that you'd like to get on, email it to news@wbaa.org, or you can always tweet your question to @WBAAnews on Twitter. Well, I wanted to start with a talk you recently gave at a conference called the Chicago Ideas Week, and you addressed an idea that you've been known for, which is running large organizations, particularly governments or an organization like a large university, more like a business. I wanted you to start by telling me a little bit more about the conference itself, if you would.
Yeah, I didn't know much about it. It's only 4 years old, but it's become very big. It's citywide all week. Last week in Chicago, there were lectures and presentations. People liken it a little bit to the TED Talks format, but they keep it very inexpensive, and lots and lots of people attend. I think we had several hundred people at our session, and it was just one of dozens that went on. And I was invited because a Harvard Business School case was written about our administration in Indiana the last few years, and it's being taught at the business school. And the professor who wrote it, he and I were invited to discuss it. So it was less a speech than a informal Q&A session, lots of audience questions, and we did talk about how in the absence of competition and in the monopoly that is government specifically, one can still strive for competence and efficiency of spending and real outcomes and positive results for people.
I'm not familiar personally with the case study. What did it determine?
Well, honestly, it was very complimentary. It found that Indiana had been, in general, well served. I'm pleased to note that Indiana's citizens were second in the nation in expressing their approval of the effectiveness of state government. In 2012, 77% said they rated it as highly effective, and that was better than most places. But that was the general finding, and the case, however, presents to Harvard students a couple of questions. It centers in specifically on a couple of decisions that we made and how we made them, case study style.
Now, this is a style of government for which you took some criticism when you were governor, and I wondered if there was any pushback from the people who were listening. Who said, well, you know, you don't have to run a business like you run a government or vice versa. And has there been any change over time in the way that people respond to that idea?
Well, first of all, I said 1,000 times, government's not a business, wasn't intended to be. You don't run it like a business. It can be more business-like about a lot of things it does, and that's what we looked for, those opportunities. Well, one thing to remember, Stan, is this is in Illinois. And Illinois has a lot of problems right now by their own admission.
I am from Illinois. I'm well aware.
And so right now, in the last few years, Illinois, its media, its civic leaders, its citizens look at Indiana and go, well, if they can do these things, pay their bills, AAA credit, money in the bank, things actually work, why are we in such a fix? And so, no, there wasn't real pushback. People were more curious about, in the questions from the audience, more curious about how you get to, a BMV that actually works and serves well, how you build infrastructure and roads when their state and most states can't. Those sort of questions.
I do have to say I went to the BMV here in Indiana the other day, and they are much more efficient generally than what I recall from getting my first driver's license outside Chicago. I wondered, since you've been at Purdue, how has your idea of running a large organization and making it more business-like changed? Is there anything that you've been informed by the university on that's changed your way or caused you to tweak some models here and there?
I always see it more as a matter of degree than something qualitatively different. The whole idea of shared governance, I always point out to people, I've never been in an enterprise where governance wasn't shared somehow. It's business, too. It's just a question of how the decision-making is distributed, and so it's a more widely distributed here, and that's fine. Doesn't mean you can't still make smart administrative decisions and doesn't mean you can't try to move things at a speed that the modern world demands.
I wanted to ask you, based on a lot of the news stories that we've been airing, especially from NPR in the last couple of weeks regarding the Ebola outbreak, and there's a lot of fear, I know, among some people, and when you've got an enclosed environment, sort of like a campus, what is Purdue's policy towards a large outbreak like an Ebola? Of course, we're not saying Ebola is anywhere near Purdue at this point, but what is the sort of immune response of a university if there is a problem like that sort of pathogen on the loose?
Important question. I've asked it. Our folks at Push and others responsible for medical services at Purdue are thoroughly conversant with all the current protocols. They've made them available to anyone who's interested and to everyone who's requested. In the extraordinarily unlikely case that there's a suspicion of even one instance here, the response will be very prompt. And believe me, we will take at least those precautions if that were ever to happen that are called for now. The thing I think is important to say is we got a real threat, all right, and it's not Ebola. It's the flu, which also kills people. For some reason, we don't pay quite the attention that we should. Kills a lot more people than the rarer viruses ever do in this country. And so I hope listeners have all gotten their flu shots and are taking the necessary public health precautions. That's the outbreak that's not only more likely, it's highly likely, and we want to make sure it's contained.
We saw the governor and the first lady go and get their flu shots a couple weeks ago, so we know that they've been vaccinated, and it's definitely a good idea for most people. This is WBAA's Monthly Conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. If you've got questions for us, email them to news@wbaa.org or tweet them to @WBAAnews on Twitter. I haven't had a chance to talk to you yet about how you feel the gay marriage ruling affects Purdue, if at all. Do you think it matters on the campus level?
Well, it matters to a lot of people personally who have very passionate views. But no, I don't think so. I mean, there may be some – I know there are some questions our benefits people are looking at now that the law has been – has changed. But no, I don't think you'll notice – any particular difference, and I think by all measures. In fact, I just saw a recent measure in which Purdue was listed as one of the more receptive and friendlier places to those of different sexual preferences, and we want to stay that way. But I think we already were that kind of place.
I was going to ask, is that by design, anything you've done? I mean, you famously, in the time where you were leading up to making a decision about whether to run for president, took a little bit of heat from your Republican friends for calling for a truce on some social issue discussions, saying those weren't worth really having in the campaign. Is there anything you've done since you've been on campus to try to make the campus that way?
No, except to support what was already going on. The new center had just opened before I got here, and we continue to fund it, of course. And hope that in every way we can, we're encouraging our students and the whole university community to be accepting and understanding of each other and take an inclusive outlook. We've probably beefed up a little bit what's going on at BGR, as we have in other respects, but no, I think that the credit for the positive environment, which I and others believe prevails here, goes to others.
You mentioned in a press conference a few months ago that you were teaching a class for the first time this semester. I wanted to ask now that we're about halfway through, how's it going, Professor?
Well, as best I can tell, it's going fine. I can tell you that I'm enjoying doing it. I think I've learned a lot from doing it, but that's not the issue. How are the students faring? Every bit of feedback I have is both direct from students, and I have some indirectly, things they've said to others, is encouraging. But I still just barely just past the halfway mark, and so I'm far from ready to pass any judgment on it. But I do believe this: the topic I told the class a couple sessions ago, the topic being the Great War, that is World War I, its causes and consequences. If a person can't make that subject both interesting and highly relevant, then pack it in. You really weren't meant to teach at all. I think the subject matter itself assures some measure of success, and I think I'm hearing that from the students. This is fascinating history. There are villains. There are huge mistakes. There are trends in collision. And then the consequences reach right into today's headlines. Ukraine, Palestine, Iraq, all these things have direct connections to the events we've been studying. So I don't know whether I'm any good at this, but the subject matter itself, I think, is highly conducive to an interesting and thought-provoking course.
I wondered, now that you've had the look from the other side, from the professor's point of view, out at what you have to do to teach a class at the university, was there anything you've learned about Purdue that maybe you couldn't have known before being a professor?
Well, I mean, it's hard. I've been happy to tell people that. When folks ask me, what'd you do last summer? I said, oh, I studied for my course. I've been approaching each session almost as one might a performance or a major speech. So I like the discipline of that. I hope that I'm growing a little as I go in terms of the ability to engage the class, get them talking and responding. It's a seminar course with about 37 students in it. And so I'm working for as much interaction as I can, and the class knows that their participation will be a part of the grade they get.
I wondered, you, of course, have to interact with the Faculty Senate and with the faculty more broadly. Does this change your outlook on how you'll deal with faculty members? Does it give you a different insight on how they might approach you?
Maybe a little extra empathy. I already felt a lot of admiration for what our faculty do. Now I think firsthand experience helps. I will tell you this, that I had it in my mind all along to teach something. Wasn't sure what it'd be. But, probably two dozen faculty members, independent of each other, made this suggestion to me. And it really fortified my view this would be a good thing to do as soon as I could get organized to do it. Many, many faculty members just wanted to make sure I had thought about doing it and encouraged it. I had invitations from three different colleges to affiliate. This is being done through the Honors College, and it's a liberal arts course technically. But I had a couple of others, Krannert, for instance. I feel I've had a lot of encouragement that it's a good thing to do. And when I bump into faculty, they ask questions like you did.
This is WBAA's Monthly Conversation with Mitch Daniels. Thanks for being with us. I wanted to ask you a few questions, if I could, about the upcoming legislative session and things that are going to be part of it. Governor Pence has, of course, said he wants to increase education funding, at least for K-12 schools. I wondered, do you think there can also be a push to either stop the reversions from university budgets that have been the part of the sort of more austere budgets of the last few years, especially as Indiana has kind of built up its reserves? And is it possible at all that Purdue and IU and Ball State could, in fact, see their appropriations go up in any sort of marked way since the state seems to be doing well economically?
One would hope. There was a significant increase proposed, and then some of it tentatively taken back. That's the reversion you talked about. The axe hasn't fallen with finality on that, but we're assuming for the moment that that piece of what had been appropriated won't happen. Well, I guess we have to make the best case we can. We just had the Commission on Higher Ed here 2 weeks ago. I presented on behalf of Purdue. A lot of good feedback to that. I do believe that I can just tell you that many of our public decision makers do understand the central importance of Purdue to the state's success. we do occupy a unique role by virtue of what we do here. I can tell you that they appreciate that we've shown some sensitivity to the cost of attendance at Purdue. Cost of attendance at Purdue gone down the last 2 years. Total cost, first time that's happened. Only school in the state where it's happened. So I believe that we have a good case and that it's being heard, but those who will decide are wrestling with a lot of priorities, and I'm sure they'll make the decision they think's best when you shake it all up together.
The idea of reversions, of course, is not a new one, and in many cases, be it municipal government or state government, there's always been a push, and I should say a push regardless of someone's political stripe, to not quite spend all of a budget, to try to keep something in reserve if you're able, and that's either done through not quite spending up to what you were allocated or by giving something back actively. But I wonder, with a $2 billion projected surplus for the state budget, is this a time where the idea of a reversion, especially from a higher education institution, is one that should even be on the table? I mean, it's not necessarily a bad policy decision, but you have to look at it, I think, in the greater context of where all the money is, right?
Yes. I'm not going to second guess those who have to weigh all the competing priorities of the state and have to look forward and try to make certain that what is right now probably America's strongest fiscal position. There are only a handful of AAA credits left and out there among the states, and Indiana never had one until the last few years. I understand why they want to hang on to that. That's good for every university. That's good for every public university. It's good for every community that has to borrow money. I'm never going to second guess people who are being cautious. But again, the importance of higher ed to this state, and I'm going to say of Purdue within that system of universities, has never been more clear, and I think that's pretty well understood.
This gets also to the idea that you used and then every other governor in recent memory has used, which is the power of the governor in Indiana to take some budget back at the governor's discretion. And I wonder, there has been a seeming disconnect even between the Republican majorities in the House and Senate and Governor Pence. Speaker Bosma has said, we're going to look at whether we think this is something that should continue. We're going to at least discuss whether that's going to go or whether that's going to stay. What's your view on that power generally? Because it's not one that every governor has. It's not unique to Indiana, but there are fewer states that have it than those that don't.
I personally think it's essential and it's appropriate. Conditions change, and to be forced to spend every penny that at some point a legislature made available just doesn't make sense. Some programs don't work. You shouldn't be forced to spend every penny that someone put up for them. Frankly, if it hadn't been for that power, Indiana wouldn't be in the shape it's in right now. And incidentally, I can guarantee you there's a huge number of legislators who know and who used to say to me all the time, I'm sure glad you have that. Hard for us to vote for less money. You know, take the criticism. We'd rather you did it. I was happy to do it in the public interest. I'll tell you, I've written this in the past. Presidents of the United States once had, it was called impoundment power, worked the same way. It was taken away in the 1970s, and I think that was a very bad mistake. And if we're ever going to have some sort of sanity fiscally at the national level, this would be one important tool to reinstate.
I think the worry becomes that it becomes almost a political partisan thing where there have been people who in Indiana have worried that education had too much of its hide taken out economically. And I think the people say, what are you doing to give this when the power is in Republican hands? It's one thing. When the power is in Democratic hands, it's a different set.
That's why we have elections. Anybody who says that disregards the facts completely. Education was protected like nothing else. It rose to the education, K-12 and total, both, are the highest percentage of the state budget in Indiana of any state in the whole country. Why? Because any changes there were very modest and one time, whereas everything else essentially in state government was reduced substantially more. Education was the highest priority. In the midst of a crushing recession, everything had to give a little bit, at least once. But, you know, folks will often say things with no factual basis, and that would be one of those examples.
But is it a sensible worry that this could become a political football?
Listen, the spending of the public money is political from its inception. You think the legislature is not a highly political, probably more partisan place. I'm just saying, you've asked me, and I'm just saying, I think in any polity, it makes sense to leave the executive some room for discretion, not to mindlessly spend money on things that where either priorities have shifted or the dollars aren't working or the underlying circumstances like a recession have suddenly changed. And the states that do have locked themselves in, like Illinois, wish desperately that they had gone about their business a different way.
It's interesting to me that the Speaker of the House would come out and say this about a governor of the same party. And I wonder if you think, from your experience dealing with the leaders of the legislature, and you had to deal with leaders from both parties during your time as governor, different speakers of the House from both parties, what does that say, if anything, about the relationship between the legislature and the relationship of the executive branch? I mean, is there anything you can read into that?
No, it's the way it was set up. There's supposed to be a tension. There are different there, and I think it's entirely appropriate to ask these questions for him or anyone else to ask. You asked me what I thought about the civics of it all, and I told you.
All right, Indiana is one of the states that also has not yet gone to a bipartisan commission to draw its congressional boundaries and the boundaries of its state house districts. This is something that seems to be gaining favor slowly. You know, there are states that have considered it. Indiana's considered it. Florida's considered it. Others and some have gone, some haven't. What's your opinion on that idea of having a nonpartisan body do it?
I think we've waded about as far into matters from my old life as we need to. That doesn't have any particular bearing on higher ed, so I'll let it go.
All right. I wondered also, you know, they're speaking of higher ed's role in government, one of the things that I've seen universities around the state do, and I worked at IU for a number of years, and we tried to, when I was down there.
Did we know that when you got hired here?
Did they know that?
No, I'm just kidding.
They actually told me. I was asking about benefits, and they said, have you worked at a different university? I said, I worked at IU, and they said, no, it needs to be one of higher education. So I thought they had a nice sense of humor
about
it.
Good enough, yeah.
So when I worked in Bloomington, we tried whenever possible to host 9th Congressional District debates because mm-hmm. we realized it was important. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem that there's going to be a debate before the 4th Congressional District election this year. I wondered if universities in this state could, since you've got us here in the 4th District, IU in the 9th, Ball State over in the 6th. Do you think the universities could play a bigger role with, like, the Indiana Debate Commission to say, we'd like to be the consistent places that host these since we often have large auditoriums mm-hmm. that can host large numbers of people to try to engage more voters in congressional elections and maybe even in local elections?
I think it's a good idea, and I guess I'm trying to think back, but I think some of these have been in university venues. They are a natural place to do it. I like the fact that it might attract the interest of students who are busy and distracted and don't always pay as much attention to elections and public life as we might hope. And so that's another reason why might make good sense.
So what about the student vote? Of course, we saw that there was only 13% participation overall in the May primary. And it's not abnormal to have a lower turnout, especially in a primary in what we call an off-year election. But can Purdue and other universities do a better job of encouraging? We can't make it compulsory, obviously, but encouraging students to go vote?
I'm sure we can. And it's you know, we'll try as we see new ways. I tried to help Purdue student government get the turnout up in its own election. I remember this spring we didn't have too much success as I read the numbers. So it's, again, I appreciate the fact that our students are studying hard. They're very busy. But I do hope, I mean, now's the time to start building the habits of citizenship. So we ought to keep trying.
I noticed that I get periodic updates from the Tippecanoe County clerk, and there was one day of early voting in Stewart Center here on campus. And I think there were fewer than 100 votes cast over the entire day. And granted, there are not too many high-profile elections on this fall's ballot, but I still thought, really? We've got 40,000-some people on this campus, and we had fewer than 100 votes?
Well, I was one of them. It's a very good system and very convenient. And so I got my ballot cast over there and wore my I voted sticker all day long and asked a few folks. I mean, they're I'm glad there are new options, but frankly, if I weren't going to be traveling, I like voting on Election Day. There's something about the ritual citizenship that I still find appealing, but it's important we have these other means of doing it, and I was happy to take advantage of one.
Would it be worth looking into whether there was a class or something that either taught students about, I could think of it a number of ways, the history of the process or taught them about civic engagement? I mean, I talked with Phil Van Fossen on Constitution Day, and he's out there doing his darndest to try to say, hey, we need to pay attention to this as the national holiday that honors one of our most important documents. Are there things like that that could go on that would be worth incorporating into a curriculum in some way?
You may be raising an even broader question. A survey just came out what American students are, college students are studying. We didn't get a very good grade. This is from the American Council of Trustees and Alumni, a respected or widely respected organization. They believe that at each college, certain subject matter, students should not be able to graduate without at least some studying some history, literature, economics, as well as the math and science that we teach. So we check a few boxes, but not all. And we have to look and see. I'm hoping that just even without such requirements, I'm hoping that most Boilermakers do get a reasonable measure of these important, I'm going to say tools of citizenship, generally liberal arts courses. But I don't know that for certain. And it's certainly true that when one surveys, as these people did, what college students and graduates know, it's pathetic how little they know about history and about the principles of a free society. So one way or another, we got to do better. I hope we're better off than that here, but I can't tell you that and prove it.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, but thanks and thanks for voting.
Yeah. Never miss.
This has been WBAA's Conversation with Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for listening.